Hey everyone, Ron Ned. Welcome back. Another episode of East Glendale Advice Givers, the podcast where each week we search for the best solutions and answers for you from Glendale's brightest. Today I'll find out what doing 10,000 inspections teaches you about both commercial properties and homes when I have a conversation with Bob Pace from Commercial Real Estate Inspectors. Bob has spent most of his life in the construction field and knows more about home and commercial building structures and systems than any other inspector I've worked with or met. Though his current company specializes in commercial real estate inspections, I'll be probing Bob's vast wealth of knowledge regarding both commercial properties and residential properties and the issues you need to watch out for. Whether you're a commercial or multifamily real estate agent or buyer, or you're a current or future home buyer, there'll be something you'll be able to take away from this podcast episode that will directly benefit you and possibly save you money. Join me as we get to know more about Bob and find out why what you don't know can hurt you. Good afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon, Ron. This is new for me. So we'll dive into this Skype thing and see what happens.
Absolutely. This is going to be fun. So we're going to find out a little bit more about you, and let's start with where you grew up and where you went to school.
Well, I did a lot of moving as a very young child, but my biggest impression was in Wisconsin as a small boy, and then in Kansas City in my junior high and high school, or my formative years, shall we say.
All right, great. And then when did you know that you wanted to be in the construction and contractor field? And tell us about that and briefly about your career path from that point.
Well, interestingly enough, I had something happen when I was, as silly as this may sound, I was very, very young, somewhere between 2 and 3 years old, and I was watching these construction guys sawing boards and having tool pouches on and sawhorses and all the things that go with being a carpenter, and something about that just completely resonated with me. And then a little bit later, I was with my grandfather, who built his own house. He repaired furniture. He had been a woodworker and worked with his hands his whole life. And I just went, I want to be like him. I want to be like Mike. And pretty much, I always was pointed in that direction one way or another. When I was about 12, I started sweeping out construction site houses, and I'm now almost 67, and I've basically been in and out of the trades just about that entire time.
That's very cool. And yeah. So when you graduated high school, did you immediately go into construction?
No, I actually went into the service. I was in the Marine Corps for a couple of years. I went to college for a couple of years. I studied a few different things, but nothing just really grabbed me. I did love the Marine Corps, but I could realize that wasn't a career path that I wanted to have. And went to college, and nothing interested me there. And the next thing you know, a friend of mine said, hey, I could use some help on some construction projects, and pretty much the rest is history.
That's cool. So then you got into construction, I assume working for other people, and then at some point you went and got a contractor's license?
I did. I started out, like I said, sweeping out houses, and then we started building houses, framing them, putting up all the, basically the wooden structure for houses back in the Kansas City area. And then from there I did remodeling for a while. I had a redwood deck company for a while with another partner. I did a number of different odd job sort of things, handyman type of things. And I moved out here to California, where I've been since 1980, and pretty much immediately started doing carpentry work, and slowly but surely evolved into doing finished carpentry work, hanging doors, doing a lot of custom woodwork things. And then from there, back in 1984, got my general contractor's license. It's one of the few people who actually got 4 years under other people in three different trades before I got my contractor's license, which is actually part of what the requirement is, surprisingly enough.
Really? So that's not a commonly done thing, even though it's a requirement?
Yeah, I know of almost nobody who does exactly what they say. They'll get somebody to vouch for them and say that they did those sort of things, and that's, quote, good enough. So I read it and went, oh, okay, well, then that's what I'll do. And I did roofing, and I did foundation work, and I did a little plumbing, I did a little electrical, I did carpentry. And then I went and took my test and got that, and slowly but surely marched up the ranks in that. and got to the point where my partner and I were building houses and doing large remodeling projects. We were number 208 in the United States, and then we evolved into doing property inspections. It seemed like kind of a natural evolution. Instead of sweating and working with your back, we were able to just use our knowledge and help others with that.
That's very cool. So basically, you did the work in all areas of residential construction, such as the main systems like electrical and plumbing and roof and HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So you actually did that work physically yourself. So that is why you're able to see things so quickly or understand things when you're doing inspections, because you've done that.
Yeah, I just want to qualify that a little bit. My real focus was more on the structural aspect of things, but I have a working knowledge of the electrical, the plumbing, heating and air, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, because you've done some work in there.
Exactly.
That's very smart of you to do that. So then, what was the change that occurred in going from construction and contracting to inspections?
For me and my partner, it was a bit of a painful change. And what I mean by that was, in the early 90s, there was a real glut of unlicensed, honestly unprofessional contractors that we found ourselves bidding against. And they didn't have insurance. They weren't actually fully licensed. They weren't bonded. They hadn't gone through all the things that we had gone through. And we were basically having to bid against these guys in a way that it's just not practical. If we tell somebody it's going to be $10,000, they'd say it's going to be $7,000. And the next thing you know, we can't make any money doing it at $7,000. And we were constantly butting up against that. It was not an easy time. And we started thinking, maybe there's an easier way to make money. How could we do this just with our knowledge? And we looked at a number of different things. But what ended up coming out is I went to the library. This is back before the internet. I went to the library and studied a number of different things. And one of the things that kind of interested me was doing home inspections. So I started researching that more and more and more. And just about the time that we were seriously considering doing that, this is in 1994, the very beginning, the Northridge earthquake occurred in January 17th at 4:31 in the morning, if anybody's keeping track.
Yep.
And it was contracting. We immediately went into, because we were helping people out, we were fixing things. We had a very large client base and a lot of loyal clients. There was insurance companies that people that needed repairs. It was amazing. However, I also did some research at the time and found out that most of the government money that comes in from FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, runs out after about 18 months. So I thought, while we were making money and paying off debts that we had accumulated to keep going, we decided that it really made a lot of sense to find a transition at that point. And that's very shortly after that, I got a hold of a friend of mine who I'd known for many years, who was doing inspections. And we partnered up, a guy by the name of John LaRocca.
That's great. So that was the start of you doing home inspections.
Correct.
And how many home inspections would you say you've done over your career since that time?
6,000 to 7,000.
Wow. So you've seen probably one of out of every 100 homes in the LA area or something like that.
Yeah, that it feels like that anyway.
Or one out of 10 maybe. All right, so then that was home inspection. So you've done quite a few of those. Now you do mostly commercial building inspections, multifamily, retail, warehouse, shopping center, specialty like churches and schools and things like that. How did that transition occur?
Well, during my process of learning construction, one of the things that had come up is I'd worked on commercial projects like hotels. There's one downtown LA, worked on that for a number of months. I worked on an electrical power plant up in Nebraska many years ago. And I'd worked on a number of different commercial projects. So in the process of formulating the inspection company with John LaRocca and another business partner, Chris Reitzman, the three of us, when large commercial inspections would come up, I was the guy who would end up usually going out and doing those or coordinating those. And I was a senior technical advisor there at that company when we were doing anywhere from 175 to 225 inspections a week as a company. So that's where I started doing more and more commercial projects. And I got very interested in commercial projects. There was something about it that I really liked. And then a little over 10 years ago, I broke off because I wanted to just specialize in commercial real estate inspections. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 11 years.
That's great. And so how many commercial inspections would you say you've done over your career?
3,000 to 4,000.
That's very good.
As a guess, yeah.
That's very good. And now you've got a team of inspectors, so you don't have to do them all yourself. You're training them and getting them so that they're as sharp as you are or as close as they can get, which is great.
Thank you.
Yes. And so in starting this company, I know that you wanted to do something to distinguish yourself from other inspection companies. And so you partnered up with somebody who does a lot of work or has done a lot of work over the years in helping build companies. And the two of you got together and came up with something called a risk assessment. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and how that came about and why that differentiates you from other companies?
Absolutely. It was to some degree, kind of a match made in heaven. About 11 years ago, I was approached by a guy by the name of Ron Litchfield. It was perfect as far as he and I forming a partnership as doing commercial inspections together. My specialty always has been training others in the construction fields and not the everyday dealings of a business and running an office and handling all the finances and all those details, all the legal rudiments that are involved. So I've always had a tendency to partner up with people who are good at that sort of thing. And after he and I sat and talked, it turned out he was very good at that sort of thing. Plus, he was good at marketing. But what he didn't have was a vehicle to market. And that's what he was kind of looking at doing. So that's how he and I got together. And during that process, we looked at, and he asked the question, he says, we've got to come up with something that separates us from everybody else. So after a lot of discussion and a lot of different thises and thats, we came up with a thing called a risk assessment. And RISC stands for Reliable Inspection of Systems Knowledge. And what it deals with are three things. We got it copyrighted. We got it trademarked. We spent a couple of years and a lot of time and a lot of money getting this done. But it answers three basic questions. One is, what's the expected useful life left in, let's say, the roof? In other words, how many years does it have left, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
The second question is, what further investigation or immediate repairs is advised? And the third one is, what should you expect to pay over the next 5 years for that system? Again, if we take the roof, if it's near the end of its life, well, realistically, in 5 years, you're probably going to need a new roof. So we put down industry standards, what those costs are, because we found almost every time in commercial, there's one basic question that's being asked. And what that question is how much? How much am I going to have to pay for this thing? How much is it going to cost me to maintain it? If the roofing is near the end, how much is it going to cost me to put a new roof on? It's just how much. Whereas residential has a tendency to be a bit more emotional. I love the neighborhood. I love the kitchen. And commercial is a bit more pragmatic from a financial standpoint.
All right. So the bottom line is, what's it going to cost me for an investor who's purchasing a commercial or multifamily property? And this gives them information that they don't typically get from an inspection that'll not just say, how much is it going to cost me now, but how much is it going to cost me property condition-wise or maintenance-wise or upgrade-wise or repair-wise over the next 5 years?
Precisely.
That's very cool. So now that distinguishes you guys. Now, are there any other inspections besides the regular type of inspection, the property inspection that you do, that you feel people should get done when they're making a commercial or multifamily type of property purchase?
Yes. There's one that hands down basically every time we recommend, even if it's brand new, and that's to do what's called a sewer line camera inspection. In other words, take a camera, put it down through the sewer line, and take it as far as you can, hopefully to where it connects up with what's called the city main, mm-hmm. and see what sort of shape that it's in. In fact, 60% of the time, even with brand new construction, we find problems with that sewer line. And more often than not, it's at the city main where it connects there, which can be a very expensive and involved process. Other than that, it really depends on the site if we're recommending any further inspections, whether we recommend a detailed roof inspection. Typically, we're pretty darn good on the roof, but where the detailed inspections can often come in, particularly electrical. I just did one today where a place was built in the early 70s and had two main electrical panels. One of them was brand new from 2015, which is unusual. That panel should have lasted another 15 to 20 years, minimally. So I got to asking the question, found out that there had been an electrical fire. That's why they changed it out. And that's another thing that is a big deal, because the other panel, I looked at it and I said, I can see why there was electrical fire. It's very dirty. Nobody's cleaned this out. Nobody's done any maintenance on it. So these are the sort of things that we tell people about. So other than the sewer line, no, I don't have anything that is always recommended.
Okay, good. So I'm going to be asking about also some information on home inspections, since you've done that. Your company still does that occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be some people who are listening who actually live in houses and buy houses and might want to know. So that's why I'm asking these questions too.
Sure.
So for home inspections, what other types of inspections do you feel are necessary? And I'll interject, as being a real estate agent, typically I'll recommend people get a general home inspection, that they get a sewer line inspection, especially in Los Angeles, that they get a termite inspection, and that they also, if there's a chimney, get a chimney inspection.
Right.
Are those the ones that you would say absolutely should be done, or is there any of those that you feel are optional or any additional that should be done too?
Those I definitely agree with. The chimney, there's way too many hidden things that can come up, particularly the masonry chimneys for anything built before 1994. And one thing that I've found is that there's a lot, it's amazing how many of the, what they call the prefabricated chimneys. And people think, well, it's prefabricated, so we don't really have to worry about it. Oh, no. It's all the connections that are inside. And the only way to see if those are...
Now, do you mean like gas chimneys?
Correct. Well, okay. Actually, gas chimneys also, because the gas lets the CO2 go out, and we've inspected them before where all the connections were actually reversed. So instead of it funneling all the gases up and out the top, it was actually funneling it back into the attic area of the house.
Again,
the only way to know that is to actually have a professional chimney guy come and take a look at it.
So what did you mean by prefabricated chimneys?
Oh, in other words, it's not what's called a masonry chimney. It's not all made out of brick and stone. Mm-hmm. And when you look outside, it's brick and stone going up. It's actually typically inside, it's something that's been made in a factory, and then they bring it in and they set it in place, and then they connect the flue, or in other words, the gas pipe that allows the hot air and gases to escape. They connect a bunch of different pipes, anywhere from 2 to 4 feet long each. So it's one of those. It's something that's been made in a factory.
Okay. And so before I interrupted you so rudely with my questions about that, you were talking about even the prefabricated ones, as opposed to just the masonry ones, have certain things that are problems. And you were starting to tell about what those were?
Right. The only way to know is to actually have a specialist come and take a look at them. It can be anywhere from the improper connection up at the top where the gases actually escape out into the atmosphere, the height of it, the sheer size of the pipe that goes up. Is that pipe in connection with wood that could be a fire hazard? It just goes on and on and on. So because it's such a specialty area, that's one of the many reasons to have somebody come and take a look at that, the chimney. The sewer line, the reason that we strongly recommend that regardless is that, well, there's a lot of different reasons, but one of the biggest ones is that everything has a basic expected useful life. Things wear out. Tires on your car wear out. the paint on your car eventually will wear out. Well, the piping that's underneath the ground is wearing out. It has a roughly 40 to 60 year lifespan in it, meaning that anything built before 1960 is essentially at the end of its expected useful life. That can be for electrical, that could be for the plumbing that's under the ground. The only way to know what shape it's in is you'd need somebody to run a camera down and through it. You mentioned termite, which is absolutely correct. The termites require a couple of things. It requires proper temperature, non-freezing, which is exactly what most of California has. It requires organic material, basically wood, which most homes are made of. And then it requires some moisture, which almost every piece of wood that's around has at least some moisture in it. That's one of the big things that the termites are going after. Termite inspection is a very specialty area, and a termite inspector can spend easily half as much time just inspecting for termites as the home inspector spends looking at everything. And so I think those are the ones that you mentioned. And as far as any other specialty inspections, then it depends on the home itself and the situation. Some examples could be things like, let's say you come and it has a very custom low voltage system, meaning let's say it's got a stereo system in the house, or it's got security systems or things like that. That technical stuff is typically way beyond the scope of a general visual inspection. It requires specialty knowledge, the technology changing in that so rapidly. So getting somebody who can come out and go through that and determine what the condition is going to be needed. It's going to take a specialist.
All right, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I think that pretty much answers that.
Yep, excellent. Now, when you or your inspectors begin an inspection, whether it's home or commercial, what is the most important first thing that you do at that inspection?
Ideally, we meet our client there and discuss with them their expectations and what we typically do. And that, to me, is critical. A lot of people are present, but not always. And at that time, you can ask them, do they have their attention on anything in particular? Are they familiar with inspections? Is there something in particular that they want us to look at? The list goes on and on. And it usually only takes a couple of minutes to sit with your client and just go over their expectations, what you're planning on doing. I personally, when I talk to people, I say, honestly, it's better if you don't just follow me around and I point everything out to you. Some inspectors prefer to do that. I find it honestly a bit distracting, and I'm more than happy when I'm totally done to go through everything that I found with them. But I have a tendency while I'm going through, because we're looking at anywhere from 300 to 500 different things, to have a lot of things in my head. I'm looking at one thing and go, oh, that makes me want to look at something else a little bit later. And if somebody starts asking me questions and what about this and what about that, while I'm inspecting, it's a little bit like trying to talk to your doctor while he's trying to listen to your heart. And I think it's better if you just, me personally, I think it's better if you just let the inspector do his thing. And then when he's done, ask all the questions that you want.
That makes perfect sense. And does that hold true for doing commercial inspections? Is that approach the same way?
Yes. I've got some people that I've inspected a lot of different properties for. They're very savvy buyers. And what will end up happening is we'll end up talking right at the beginning for 30 seconds. And some of these guys are so savvy, they don't show up. However, we've already had all these other communications. They've seen a bunch of my reports. We've had lots of discussions. So at that point, it's not, to me, as important. But for a home, a place you're going to live, a place you're going to raise your kids and all of that, I think it's critical that you're willing to spend that time and probably, honestly, a lot more.
That makes perfect sense to me. Now, mostly dealing with commercial inspections, since that's your specialty, what is your view of your place in the whole real estate buying and selling process? I mean, you've got the buyer, you've got their agent, you've got the seller, you've got their agent, and then you're the inspector. You're usually hired, not always, but usually hired by either the buyer or their agent to come in. And even though my experience in real estate is an agent is in residential property, not commercial property, I've been through hundreds of inspections. And having seen that, I've seen inspectors who either try to scare people about every little thing that comes up, or exaggerate things, or they downplay things. And honestly, it can affect things quite a bit. But a really good inspector, I value that because that's very helpful. So how do you view your position or your inspector's position in this whole process?
That's a great question, Ron. I've operated for a very long time that my job is to make sure that my client understands what they're getting themselves into and they're doing it with their eyes open. And what I've told everybody that I've trained, and I tell my clients also, is that my job is not to sit here and tell you what's bad. My job is to sit here and tell you what is, the good and the bad. And legally in the state of California, anybody who does a real estate inspection for hire and for money cannot legally work on anything for the next 12 months. And to me, that's honestly a very brilliant thing, so that there's no vested interest, or they're not supposed to be, any vested interest in the inspector telling somebody, you've got a roof that's at the end of its life, you need a new roof. However, having said all of that, I feel strongly that I'm operating from what I feel is a solution standpoint, meaning if you need a new roof, okay, you need a new roof. Things were out. It'd be like if I tried to scare somebody into, oh, your tires are all worn out. I don't need to do that. I said, your tires are at the end of their expected useful life. In my opinion, you need new tires. If you want new tires, here's your cost. If your roof is at the end of its life, it either needs major work or and expect to need a new roof in the next 5 years, here's some industry standards of what the costs are. So to answer your question, I feel my job is to make sure that my client is informed and that the report that we give them, this is kind of an aside, but I think applicable. I feel very strongly that the report should be in non-technical terms as much as absolutely possible, because all you're doing at that point, if you throw technical terms out, then the people don't know what you're talking about, and they don't know if that's good or bad. People know if you flush a toilet and it goes down and takes care of all the business it needs to take care of. They don't really need to know much more than that, other than maybe what's happening underneath the ground. So my job is to communicate in a way that they can understand and be able to use the information.
Now, I have a question about that. Going back to my own experience, the inspection company that I've used in the past, one of the things that they'll do, the inspector that I commonly had work with me had a lot of experience in construction and also was a general contractor. And he would go through the report afterwards with the client, go over his findings. And then he would do things like he would say, this over here, this you can get the part over at Lowe's or Home Depot for $550. It'll take maybe an hour to put in, or you can hire an electrician, total maybe about $150. This thing over here is minor. This thing up here, this is going to require looking into further. And this thing over here is major. You better check that out. Do you do a similar type of thing where you not only just tell them this is what's going on, but give them some kind of way of looking at it, a perspective on it?
Yes. And again, it depends on the buyer. Some buyers want all of that information. Some are more familiar with homes. But what we always do at the end of every inspection is we go through it with the buyer, what we found, what we think's important, what we think is not as important, but certain things we'll stress. And we've got three different levels in our report. One's called serviceable, which means it's doing the job for which it was intended, exhibits typical wear and tear for its age. Another one is needs attention. That means this thing either needs further attention or it needs a more detailed review by somebody else. Shall we say we inspect a home built in the 40s, we look underneath, and it doesn't have any of the upgraded seismic retrofitting that is very popular and recommended. We'll say, you know, why don't you have a foundation guy come and take a look at this? You don't have to do anything if everything seems fine. It's just older. You don't have to do anything, but you might want to. And if you want more information, here's some ways to go. So yes, we try to give them our judgment of what's more important and what's less important.
That's great. Now, do you have any examples of a time where you did an inspection and you'd made a recommendation to somebody to do something, a commercial inspection, and they didn't follow your recommendations and suffered some consequences or had problems later on, or it was costly for them? Anything like that ever occur?
Yeah, probably the easiest one to understand. It was a large project. It was a commercial project, and most of it had been vacant for a while. I'm not quite sure how long. I think parts of it had actually been vacant for some years, multiple buildings. And when it was all said and done, one of the things that I recommend to the client was to have the sewer line inspected with a camera. Mm-hmm. And he nodded his head yes. And about 3 months later, he calls me up and said, well, you know, we just moved in last week and all our sewer lines are backing up. And he wasn't being accusatory at all. He was just asking what he should do. And I said, well, did you get that sewer line camera done? And he hesitated for a minute. He goes, no. And I said, okay, well, that's what you need to do. And you're going to need a plumber out there. Well, to make a long story short, the repair was $35,000 that a $350 camera inspection would have determined. It turns out that his sewer line didn't even connect out into the street. This is an older building, complex. It actually went into a pit in the ground in the middle of this yard, which is no longer legal. And so he had to connect to the street, and it was a very long run. It was a real mess, to say the least. So yeah, that's probably the most graphic from a commercial standpoint.
All right. Well, then on the other side, now, have you ever had a commercial inspection where you had some recommendations that you gave to somebody where it saved people money?
Oh, yes. In the state of California, there's a thing called cool roofing. Cool roofing is basically a roof that helps reflect the sun's rays. Basically, it's white, and there's a lot of different ways of going about it and making it happen. There are a lot of commercial projects have flat roofs. Flat roofs are notorious for leaking, and they also don't last very long. They only last 15 to 20 years as a rule. We saw a roof that was definitely in need of help. However, it was basically just worn, and it didn't have damage to it. So we were able to talk to the people so that they could put this cool roofing over the top, actually a liquid elastomeric, just meaning it's water-based, rubberized type of material. And they cleaned the roof off, they put this elastomeric on, and the roof, which was at the end of its life, was now going to last at least another 5, probably closer to 10 years. And instead of it costing them somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000 to do, it cost them somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000, or basically half of the price of a new roof.
All right, so you helped that company. Instead of them doing what normally would be recommended, they were able to do this alternative, which actually extended the life of their roof, saved them probably $20,000 to $30,000, which then they could put back into their business, or they could take as profit as the owners, and it helped their business. It helped them personally. I think that's great.
Yeah, it felt really good to let them know that.
That's very cool. Now, your company is also a member of a group called AIR. Can you explain what AIR is and why this is significant?
Yeah, AIR is the Association of Industrial Realtors, and it's a very large organization that pretty much all the industrial properties that change hands go through AIR in all of Southern California. We're the only inspection company that's listed in their materials. We're one of the only companies that does exactly what we do, and it's been a great working relationship.
That's excellent. Now, before we end, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Well, I feel strongly that any property that you're buying, have somebody professional take a look at it and advise you. The biggest thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you're making a purchase with your eyes open. We also do a lot of lease inspections. In the commercial area, there are certain types of leases where the lessee, or the person who's going to move into that site, has a lot of responsibilities for that site, of maintaining certain things. And the reason we do our inspections is it gives them, in the industry, it's called a baseline, or in other words, it gives them something in writing, the condition it was in when they moved in, so that let's say it's a 5-year lease, and after 5 years, they decide to move out. And in the lease, it says you have to maintain the heating and air conditioning. And he gets ready to move out, and the air conditioning was very old when he moved in. And the owner says, no, you got to replace it. And he goes, no, I don't. It was really old when I moved in. It's a miracle it's still working now. So I feel very strongly that inspections are what I call cheap insurance. Okay, so you spend a few bucks at the beginning, and you go through, and now you understand what you're getting. And sometimes you can use it for negotiations. That's not my intent. My intent is to make sure my client understands what it's all about.
That's excellent. It makes perfect sense to me. And like I said, from my experience, I understand that completely.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to make sure that in the podcast notes that we have both the phone number people can call if they want further information or are interested in getting an inspection. And what is the website that people can go to if they want to see more about your company and what you do?
CommercialRealEstateInspectors.com. And the other one is, if you don't like to type a lot, you can just do CREILLC.com, the acronym, CREILLC.com.
Good. And is there a main phone number for the office that you can share if people want to call in?
Absolutely. 818-957-4654.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll put all that information in there, and I appreciate the time you took today, Bob. Your wealth of knowledge, and we could probably go on for hours and hours, but we had to keep this limited. I appreciate you sharing what you know with us.
Great, Ron. You can also let people know if they have particular questions, feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email, and I'll try to answer them to the best of my ability.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate your time.
That's all for this week, but join me next week when our scheduled guest will be Betty Porto of Porto's Bakery and Cafe, one of the most beloved bakery chains in Los Angeles and Orange counties. You definitely won't want to miss this one. Now, before I leave, I just want to take a moment to thank all of you who joined us this week. I really do appreciate the time you take to listen to this podcast, and I thoroughly enjoy getting to introduce you to all the special people who agree to have a conversation with me. I hope today's guest shared some information that'll help you or someone you care about, and I'll continue to do my best to bring you interesting local guests with useful advice. There are three things you can do to help me be able to continue to bring you interviews like this one. One, listen to my other podcast episodes that cover topics of interest to you. Two, spread the word and share this podcast with others. And three, subscribe to the podcast. To automatically receive each new podcast as it comes out, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, so you can continue on this journey with me. In fact, go ahead and do that right now so you don't forget. And if you want to leave me a rating or review on iTunes or Google Play or send me an email, I'd love that too. See you next week.